ages. So I think I wrote them all around that time, and what is written on the about page there, it reflects my concept of rhythm changes at the time, a lot of which has held up, and it is pretty much still the same. I mean, it kind of, it worries me, it keeps me up at night in any given week all the way through. I'm like, it's, I'm trying to reinvent it in my mind. I'm like, okay, I have to do this a little bit differently because this isn't working. And, you know, I want to try doing this a different way because I've noticed that this didn't really go where I wanted it to go, or I wish I did this differently. And so it's always kind of turning over. But pointing that out is cool because it comes from several years ago, and it's still there, and it probably still does reflect what I'm intending to do with it. So it's cool that you brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's just good when any person that is writing or creating is pretty transparent about, like, you know, their intentions in writing. And, like, on the point of, like, Substack and stuff, blog writing and stuff, I feel like is on a bit of an upturn as well. As well, jazz music is back.
And blogging.
I think the crux of it is storytelling at its own, like, you know, like, yeah, I'll read somebody's Substack about, like, a bad matcha latte that they had and how it translates to, like, their unhappiness with the current structure. And it's just so incredible, like, to hear from folks. But do you have any thoughts? Because you, again, on top of the blog, you have the podcast. Like, what do you make of this, like, uptick and, like, a love of, like, storytelling from folks?
I want to combine that in with something that I'm pretty sure I recall is in the FAQs and mention it first of all, which is that there is a separate thing than what I've done with my career so far. And that separate thing is being a music journalist, which I am not, and I don't claim to be. And the reason why is because I feel like that's a whole separate come up that I never did. And I have a couple friends who are. I don't have a lot of friends who are music journalists because this is like another scene. If you're coming up as a music journalist, in my opinion, to me, what that means you do is you write for many different publications and you get paid by them as a freelancer, and you pitch to these publications and you tell them your plan of what you're going to write about, or they assign you things and you have an editor and there's an editing process. And I know nothing about any of that, and therefore I'm not ever going to hold myself out there as a music journalist, because that would be like I actually don't care about this personally, but it would be like if I cared a lot about what it means to be a quote-unquote jazz musician, and somebody who didn't have that so-called path came in and tried to make themselves out to be that. Some people probably care a lot about that. Maybe I don't so much, but for that reason, I wouldn't hold myself out there as a music journalist. And I do think I mentioned that in the FAQ. So then it's like, okay, what am I actually doing? Well, I mean, I think about it as like I'm making a map of a group of people, I guess. Like that, even the genre of the music doesn't matter to me so much about what ends up on the list, because my guiding thing for what I put on the list and what I cover is just like, who are these people and how do I know them and who else do they know? How do they fit in with the people who know each other today? Really fun part for me to nerd out about in writing and researching and talk to people is how do they connect to the people in the past, especially the people that I don't know about. That's what really motivates me. That's the storytelling thing that I think a lot of people are interested in. If I'm able to keep running an outlet that provides something like that, then I'm really stoked that even though I'm not a music journalist out and out, that through whatever it is that I've been doing, all these various things over the last 10 or 15 years, if I'm able to do that, then I'm really happy about that. I look for other people who are doing that. I will try and keep up to date with everybody who's like hosting an interview podcast in the Canadian music scene, or like other rhythm changes like projects that are out there in the major cities of Canada. I'm trying to stay following these people because I appreciate what they're doing. I learn from what they're doing. I never felt like I'm doing this alone, that's for sure. There's a lonely aspect to it where the decisions, you're alone when you're figuring out, okay, what am I publishing? What's my track here that I'm working towards to try and make rhythm changes better? I'm alone on that. I don't have many other people I can talk to about that, but I have a lot of people that I can look to how they're doing their things and learn from their things.
Yeah, definitely. Would you say your approach to interviewing has changed at all over the years?
Well, I've been doing it for long enough that even like my voice has changed. Yeah. Like my voice has gotten a little bit less nasally. I don't know if I'll ever fully shake that, but yeah, I've probably hosted 300-400 podcast episodes across different shows. I've probably produced like 400-500 podcast episodes. So it's been fun to learn about that. I've never hosted live radio. I told you that before we went on air here. So kudos to the two of you for doing that. I think it's very cool. But my approach to interviewing is not to... Sometimes people ask me in the like pre-interview process, they'll be like, oh, can you let me know what you're going to ask about? And I actually can't because I don't really know what I'm going to ask. I can't tell you the specific questions I'm going to ask. The kinds of things I prepare is really just... Honestly, the gig list archive is great because I've got 5 years of shows that I can browse through and I can just like search for a person's name in the gig list archive and like pull up all the shows that they've done in the last 5 years in Vancouver at least. And sometimes my whole episode of the person will just be, hey, this show, how was that? This show, you know, and I'll just, that's enough. That's enough prep. I maybe don't need to do anything else. I'll listen to their new album and, you know, write down the track list and all that stuff. But I don't prep any questions. I don't really know what I'm going to talk about. I have this thing that I've noticed now, though, now that the years have added up, which is I've become aware that when I interview somebody, it could be the only time I get to hang out and have a conversation with them for years, even if we have a lot of fun. I didn't appreciate that when I was starting out. I thought, oh, I'm making new friends by doing this. But really, like, if people have been on the Rhythm Changes podcast in 2021, 2022, it's quite possible a lot of those people, like, I haven't spent time with them since, even if they're in Vancouver. And I'm like, man, that kind of sucks. But, I mean, it's cool. I know that the people are there, but you just, it really makes your capacity for people kind of stark. Like, so many things about doing Rhythm Changes have made me become aware of that. And so I just want to have the best time possible with that person. So in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, this might be the only long conversation I have with this person for 4 or 5 years, even if I see them for 5 or 10 seconds once every month or so. So I really got to enjoy this. And if we can hang out afterwards, you know, I really want to enjoy it while this person has given me their time. And my appreciation for that grows every year. And to be real, like, you know, I've interviewed people who have passed away. And then, you know, it's a similar kind of thing. So I think about that more. I think I'm going to be considering that more and more every year. But I just realized that when you do something like Rhythm Changes, you like create this surface area to for people. It's an excuse for people to come and talk to you and hang with you. And I don't want to. It's almost, to me, it's a more well-fitted excuse for that than playing, because playing is a great excuse like that for me and for so many people. It puts us in contact with people we really love and care about and want to spend time with. But for me, Rhythm Changes can do that too. So I think about that a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, I'm trying to pivot. That was a really great answer, and kind of like thinking about specifically, like, I'm hanging on to like the note you had about not being a music journalist, but I'm trying to find a good word to describe the thing you do that isn't music journalist.
Because
it's not that. It's like a, you know, it's a third mysterious thing that we haven't quite figured out.
It's a third secret thing.
It's a third secret thing. There's something about being an adult trying to, especially as like a creative, finding good times to talk with people that you respect and hang out with. We're hanging out right now and we're having a great conversation, but lovely. We should probably brainstorm, I think, a little bit on the third secret thing.
Maybe definitely
another tune for now.
Ooh,
yeah,
let's do it.
All right, do you want to introduce this one, Will? We got
the best person.
Oh, we're gonna play some of my music.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, let me come over here. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to play... Oh, this is great. Great choice to both of you or whoever made this choice. So we are going to play a track from my most recent release as a leader, which is an EP titled Queen's Park. And we're going to play the track Aim to Stay, which was also the title track of my first album. But this is a second version of Aim to Stay that features Madeline Elkins on guitar, who you just heard before. And it's a recording from my EP Queen's Park.
Enjoy. Thank you.
Who doesn't love music? Join the weekly discussion at the CJSF Record Club with other music aficionados checking out new releases and forgotten classics, exploring and learning about genres and loving music. Every Thursday at CJSF Burnaby from 4 p.m. till 5 p.m. Listen, learn, and share.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you're tuning into Super Summer Programming. We have been doing an interview today with Will. I'm Stella.
I'm Hallelujah.
And hello again.
Nice.
But yeah, just a quick correction for our listeners. That version of Aimless Day was actually off of Will's first record rather than the second record that you had mentioned. So if you want to do a little re-listening, remember that. But it is the same song, just re-recorded with some different arrangement going into it.
Different arrangement, different people. Now you can do the back-to-back.
Yeah, no, a little side-by-side vibe chasing. But we're keeping on the themes of local music and jazz as an overall theme and figuring things out, I guess, in a post-pandemic world-ish. But yeah, I have a more relaxed question for you.
All right.
I would love to hear your, like, worst gig story. This is a good one for any musician.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to. Yeah. It's, yeah, so, I mean, I could actually take it a couple of different directions. I could give you a funny one, or I could give you a heavy one, because the heavy one is, I do actually have, like, one that I've written about at Rhythm Changes and that I talk about often, but I also have funny ones from my band days or so I could start with one, or I could do, which direction do you think I should start with here? What are you feeling? Okay. Well, I'll just zoom through the heavy one, because this one that I talk about a lot, and because we just played a track from my first album, it's kind of tied into that. So I recorded that album, Aim to Stay, when I was 20 in 2015, and I was abusing alcohol. I was basically unemployed. You know, I was working by playing gigs, and I was living at my mom's house in New West, which effectively means that I was unemployed. I did manage to record the album, though, which was cool. And I played a gig in downtown Vancouver where I was called to do an opening set for an album release by an older person, not like 10 years older than me, person in the jazz scene who was putting out her first album as a leader. And I was called by a musician who's from the generation older than me, because my parents' age, to slot into his instrumental jazz trio alongside him on piano and a drummer. And I was 19, and I showed up, and I had been having something to drink before I showed up, and so had this person. And musically, it just didn't go well for me whatsoever. For all kinds of reasons. I didn't know what we were going to play. You know, we play jazz standards, which means you don't always have to know what you were going to play, but I was not ready to play, so to speak. And I couldn't play at the level of these people, to be honest. And so I just absolutely bombed this gig. I got so terrified of that. And then, you know, about a month later, I had some more kind of formative musical experiences where I got to meet, like, one of my favorite artists of all time, who still is one of my favorite artists of all time, and play his music for him. And, like, go hear him live. And the combination of those two experiences got me writing all this music that became the music on my first album. So that gig in particular, I still think about even to this day. It's like 12 years later. And that was a big part of the reason why I wanted to. Like, I had already dropped out student-wise from CAPU by that time. I already had. But that gig affected me so much. I was not ready to process that. That age affected me so much that I really wanted to get away and do something else. And so I did, and that's part of why I got into my band. But here, I'll tell you a funny one as a chaser because of that. So then my band, which was called Early Spirit, we recorded our first album half in Vancouver and half in Quebec. It's actually like the Quebec side of Ottawa, if either of you have ever been to Ottawa. I don't know, but you know.
But not the Quebec side. I'm interested.
Go across the river right on the bridge, and then you're in Hull, Quebec, and, you know, it's Gatineau and that area. So we recorded some of the tracks on our first album, unrelated by Early Spirit. We recorded some of those in Chelsea, Quebec, which is kind of outside that area, at a friend's house, like a home, big home studio property sort of thing. But to help pay for our flights to get there, we booked some gigs at this bar in Ottawa. And it's been long enough now, and I never really know these people, so it's not like I'm airing any funny dirty laundry here or anything. I'll just tell you what happened, which is we booked three nights at this bar, like we to try and make some good money, and like we played, you know, three sets, 9 till midnight or whatever it was at this bar, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. And the main, so we had four guys in the band. At the time, it was like a multi-age band thing. There was a 60-year-old, he's the front man, singer-songwriter of the band and the face. And then there was a 30-year-old, he was the drummer. And then there were two 22-year-olds, me and my friend Gabrielle. And we kind of ran the band. It was funny, like the back end, the young guys did. And it was just a funny, it was a lovely, lovely dynamic. I went so many places with them, and it was such a fun chapter of my life. But it wasn't me who set up these bar shows in Ottawa. It was one of the other members. And I heard about it, and it's like, okay, this is what we're doing. We're showing up here. The price, what we're going to get paid is X for all three nights. And then we show up, and first of all, there's like no gear there. Like, we have our guitars and violin and stuff like that, but and drums. You know, we have drums, but there's no mics. There's like speakers. There's no board. Honestly, now that I think about it, I'm sure the board was tucked away or something, but like we went and rented like everything we needed from the Salon Quaid at the last minute, and like we started our first night late because of that. Anyways, the rest of it all goes fine throughout the weekend, and then we get paid at the end, and I get, it's cash at the end in an envelope, and it's like 1 a.m. and we're taking a taxi back to where we're staying, and I open this envelope and I count the cash, and it's half of what I was expecting for the lot for all three. And I didn't book it, but I was just told by my bandmate that it was X that we were going to get paid. So I text the manager of the bar at 1 a.m. I'm like, hey, can you call me right now? And we talk on the phone. I'm like, I got this, but we're supposed to get paid this. We got X. We're supposed to get 2X. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, okay, let me get right back to you. And I ended up like texting with him until 2 or whatever, trying to sort this out. And eventually he's like, okay, I'll send you e-transfer tomorrow. What's the e-transfer address for the rest of it? And then the next day he sends us, you know, the other half of the money. And then like months later, I'm like adding everything up. And then I asked the other bandmate, I was like, hey, it was funny what happened back there at that show, right? And he's like, yeah, I told you guys that we were supposed to get 2X, but actually I looked back at our text and we were only supposed to get X. So like I strong-armed the manager of this bar into doubling our pay. I didn't even know it. I was like asking so brazenly for something, but I thought I was just trying to correct it, but really I was like texting and calling him in the middle of the night, berating him to double our pay, and he did. So that was pretty lucky, I would say, for us.
Mm-hmm. I will say, if they were able to do it, it was in the budget. You had to know your worth, I guess.
We should have just asked, yeah. We should have just asked in the first place.
Yeah, you're advocating for yourselves, you know?
Yeah.
No mics either.
Yeah, yeah, that was weird.
Mm-hmm. You definitely cleared out that Long and McQuaid on a Friday night right before anybody played the gig. There's nothing like the pre-gig Long and McQuaid run for everything that's missing. It's just so high stress.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you guys missed the earlier half of this interview, we've been chatting a little bit about Will's experiences working on Rhythm Changes, which is a lovely blog, gig list, podcast situation. I feel like we've been talking everybody's ears off about how blogging's really cool and storytelling is great. I wanted to, this is more of a nerdy thing, but like I think right now in this age of algorithms and social media, a lot of people are kind of opting out of social media in a way or trying to remove themselves from it. And I actually thought it was interesting that you'd kind of shifted or brought some of the content that you create with Rhythm Changes through like the like a direct to subscriber model, which is catching on quite a bit with some of the creatives around town. I wanted to hear more about your thought process on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. But I don't know how else I would do it, even though it is. Like, I don't think there is an easier way. I just think it's hard. Like, the only way that it wouldn't be hard is if you're able to just keep enjoying the process and enjoy 100% and never think about it. Think about it 0%, worry 0%. And you can never do that because you'll always end up worrying about, like, oh, we need to figure out how we could get more subscribers or even just more free signups in general. Like you're aware of the trajectory. The only way it wouldn't be hard is if you could completely shut your mind off of thinking about that side of things. And you can't if you're running it by yourself. It's always in front of you. You have to think about it. It's different than having to think about all the social media stuff that people talk, you know, artists talk about expectations to post things. And I'm lucky that I kind of get to ignore all of that, really. Like, I mean, maybe I'm missing out on something. I'm sure I am, by not having a thought out strategy there, or by really, I don't enjoy posting anything. And so I really kind of just post when I have to or when I feel like it. And that's okay, because I do have this direct lane. So I'm lucky that I've kind of dodged that stuff, even though I'm probably leaving a lot on the table by not caring about it. But the direct side, I'm really grateful for the people who show up. It is really hard. I've tried dozens and dozens of different ways of looking at it to try and continue to get more free signups, get more paid subs. And it is very, very hard, and it eludes all best laid plans. But there is still so much that I can enjoy about the process, though, that I have been able to keep doing it for 5-6 years. But yeah, it's hard, and I don't know that there is another way if you want to do something like Rhythm Changes, because audience is not big enough that I can go solicit sponsorships. I'm not going to be a nonprofit, so I'm not really going to... Like, I've never taken any grant funding at Rhythm Changes, and I don't really plan to. I've tried some applications once in a while, but really I just wanted to learn about those applications, to be honest. I do a lot of grant stuff in my day work, but I've never taken grant funding at Rhythm Changes. I've never needed it. Like I was talking about earlier on air, that it kind of pays its own way, and that's all I really expect about it. I would love it if more people could work with me. I've had some experiments on that. You know, David's doing Calgary gig list now. I'd love to have it be less of a solo thing. I would love to figure that out. But that's going to take however long it takes, because I'm going to keep running it this way. And I think the way that I'm doing it, I don't have to have any unique skills to be able to do that, because I don't. I'm just here. I'm just trying to show up, and I think anybody else could attempt to do the same for however long they want to. I welcome anybody else who wants to show up and do things like this. I love seeing that happen. So I think there's no barrier to entry. Once you're in it, it's very hard, but there's a lot to enjoy about it. That's how I would sum it up, and I think I can keep doing it this way for however long I want to, really. It's just as long as I want to do it, I can't continue doing it. There isn't anything that's going to stop me.
On the grant thing, just quick comment, sorry. I distinctly remember like a Rhythm Changes or one of something you wrote that was like a grant, like a factor grant.
Ah, yeah.
Totally use that for one of my assignments as like a little guide.
Every year, I published my 2-factor artist development applications from years ago as an artist that I did, and I got. And every year when I see that page get views, I'm like, oh, there must be a factor deadline coming up.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's a pretty, I think it's a final assignment at the program I did to write a mock factor grant. So I was cool. Like, this was a nice little guide. I did pretty good.
Good.
We do need to start wrapping up. We are running out of time, and it would still be great to hear if you have anything coming up that you want the listeners to know about. Or
I don't personally at this time. A lot of things just happened. The Jazz Festival just happened, and summertime people go away and do different things. But yeah, I just want to shout out the people who I currently play with all the time, which is I have a band now that I play with sometimes, and I did at the Jazz Festival, Western Red Cedar, with John Nicholson on woodwinds, Jancis Bautista on piano, Madeline Elkins on guitar, and Jen Yakimovich on drums. And I play in the Madeline Elkins trio with me and with Kevin Romain on drums. And Madeline put out the album Brighton Train that we heard on air at the beginning of this hour. And that band has played a fair bit over the last couple of years, and it's been some of the best times my whole musical life to date. And so that band's playing, and I have Western Red Cedar. Rhythmchanges.ca is the website, and you will see me attending all kinds of local shows, and I'm easy to find, and I love to talk, so hit me up.
Nice, cool. I wonder if we have time for a little bit of the next song before we head out. Do you want to?
Well, I guess we'll sign off a little bit. We'll be playing you one more tune. I'm Hallelujah.
I'm Stella.
And I'm Will. Thank you for having me.
This is 90.1 FM CGSF. Thank you for tuning into our Super Summer programming. This next song is by Girma Woldemeche. It's called Fikrish Darimbe, off his album Nafote, which is a new CanCon Ethio Jazz record, which I've been excited to hear. Thank you so much. Have a good morning.
Thanks for tuning in, and see you all next week. tuning in to our super summer programming.
Catch us next Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m.
And until then, stay super chill.